peace and grace in the name of our Lord Yeshua the Christ, Joshua Somerville Lowther, servant sent to bring a message to the 12 tribes of Israel which are scattered abroad. Greetings. This is going to be the beginning of a series of messages about time. Time is another one of those things that many of us think that we understand and that we know, and unfortunately in the world that we live in today, that's just simply not the case once again. Time is often thought about whenever we look at a clock, and it's often thought about whenever we look at a paper calendar that hangs on the wall, when we memorize the amount of days in a month, and the amount of days in a week, and the amount of hours in a day. However, contrary to this popular belief, we are actually not looking at time at all. We are not understanding time at all, with the exception of it being in an abstract average. And the reason why this is something that is in dire need of being talked about with Christians, now it's not in dire need to be talked about with the heathen pagan world that is around us, and the, we'll call, Gentilized world that is around us also. If you're interested in who I am referring to when I talk about Gentiles, it would be good to listen to a message on what is grace that can also be found through this ministry. And that would help clarify some of that by definition. However, in context of what we're talking about, the world around us, the people who are subject to the elements and the rudiments of the world that are all around us seem to put stock in things that require much more faith than the things that God has created that do not require faith. Now, God is generally viewed as being a God who desires faith. Yahweh, the God of the Bible, is a God who speaks of faith so often in belief and trust, which are all synonyms, so often that it has become interwoven with the fabric of biblical understanding. Yet there are things in his system of creation, in his what some call worldview, that do not require much faith at all. If you remember in the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, we understand that faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Well, when we are dealing with time, we are actually dealing with something that can be seen, even though we, as modern 21st century people, use instruments to dictate time and to understand time because it is abstract in the way that we use it today. Hours are abstract, so we use a clock. Months are abstract, so we use the paper calendar system so that we have little square boxes for days. And I'm not saying that it is wrong for a person to use a thing that helps them understand an abstract principle. Nor am I saying that in and of itself the use of a paper calendar or the use of a clock is sinful. I'm not saying it is a breach of God's law, according to 1 John 3:4. Sin is transgression of the law. So I'm not saying that. What I am saying, however, is that by not knowing true time, as the creator of the universe has told us, we are denying a principle understanding, and not only unlocking what the Bible has to say to us, but we are also denying the ability for us to comprehend our God as He works with us in the present day. It is unfortunately thought that God has not used any evidence to show Himself to the people on earth or to the creation on earth. And therefore, many agnostics and atheists and people of that sort ask for the proof. Where is the proof that there is a God? yet Psalm 19 offers a very clear understanding about where God is, how you can see Him, how you know His glory. Go and read Psalm 19. This will not be a message in which we're going to go deep into Bible verses and chapters. You will do that on your own as I mention them if you're interested. I will, however, give you the context in which I am using it. The Bible tells us that the heavens declare, this is Psalm 19, the heavens declare the glory of God, the firmament shows His handiwork. Day unto day utters a speech, night unto night shows His knowledge. There is no voice, there is no language where His word is not heard. His line's gone out through all the earth, His words to the end of the world. Now that is how I would read it and understand it. And your translation may say something just a little bit different, but it's not going to say much else different. Rather, what we are trying to see here from Psalm 19 is that what happens in the heavens, which will be tied into true and actual time, according to Genesis chapter 1, declares God's glory. The actual heavens do that for God, and they show us God's function and that which He is doing day unto day. Anyone who would tell you that the feasts that are mentioned throughout the scriptures and the Sabbath that is mentioned in the Bible, which is going to be where this teaching goes in its end understanding, are irrelevant for the present day, or that they do not matter. They simply do not understand godly time. Time as God shows it. The reason for this is because that glory that is up in the heavens that God shows us is time. It is the symbolism of time. It is the calendar in the heavens. Now, I'm not saying that our 21st century understanding has this all figured out. However, I can guarantee, to the best that I can, that ancient people, when they said they would be at a specific place at a specific time, according to the sun, moon, and stars, they were at that place. They knew how to understand it because it was all they had. The abstract calendary understanding did not come into play yet in its fullness. And so, with that being said, this is going to sound confusing. I've even heard it said before that you have to be a minor astronomer to understand what you're talking about regarding the heavens, or to understand how God has set things in motion. You have to be an astronomer. It's too complicated. My response to that is, in order to use the system that most of the world uses, which is called the Gregorian calendar system that we have today, you have to have a lot of memorization and a lot of faith. And it may even go as far as to say that you have to be borderline Catholic to actually believe it. Actually, I would have to say you would have to be at least faithful to Pope Gregory VIII, the one who concocted the calendar, Julius Caesar, who was the first one to put it in, pagan Julius Caesar, who put it first into institution, and then it was adapted by Pope Gregory, not personally, but has his name on it. You would have to be those things. Simply ask yourself how you know how many days are in the month of August. Or simply ask yourself how you know how many days are in the month of Januarius. I'm sorry, January. Januarius is the god in which it's named after. Once you ask yourself that question and you receive the answer that you memorized it in school or when you were a child or your parents taught it to, you'll realize that it is so abstract that you had to commit it to memory. Because there is nothing other than a paper system in a faith-based society that surrounds it that keeps it going. So what is the difference between God's calendar and the Pope's calendar or Julius Caesar's calendar or any other calendar system? Well, once you acknowledge that the evidence in the heavens shows the glory of God, you might want to start researching what that glory is, what it does, a little bit more. Go to the book of Genesis and go to chapter 1. Start reading when it starts talking in the very beginning about, and God said, let there be light. God separates day from night. All throughout Genesis, we're told about time. We are told that time, the things that are the elements of time, the actual literal creations of God, are the first thing created. So we have the, what people would say, the beginning of time, right? Well, the beginning of time references that God created light. He said, let there be light. So this particular understanding of creation at the beginning of time is absolutely correct. And as you move forward into that understanding, you eventually get to where God ordains the lights in the heavens, the sun, moon, and stars, the greater light, which we know is the sun, the lesser lights, which is the moon, and he made the stars also, the scriptures tell us. He made them for signs, seasons, days, and years. Signs, seasons, days, and years. That is what they were created for. Okay? Now, there is a lot of questioning that happens at this time and at this juncture that says, well, before God ordained or made these lights in the heavens, what was instituted before that? What was being used to reference the other days prior? My answer to that is simply that when God created the heavens, he created a system of timekeeping that already had those things present. It's part of the heavens when he created them. The lights, on the other hand, were ordained at that time. Now, did God set them in motion, or did God arrange their orbits and all those types of things that we talk about when we talk about sun, moon, and stars on that third day? I don't know for sure, and I don't think the Bible is specific about it. But one thing I do know is that whenever we go all the way to the beginning, to the head of creation, we know that there is a dark period prior, before light comes into the world, when God creates everything, and before he says, let there be light. And however that all happened, it was an organized system that God put into place on the third day in its entirety. Now, where was the sun, moon, and stars in position to the earth during that time? There's a lot of speculation on that idea. There's a lot of speculation on what it was. I think that there is a proof once you take Genesis 1 for what it actually says. By the time you get to Genesis chapter 2, you can be sure to understand what's being referenced and that things had been progressing in the creation week, if that is to be believed as a literal creation week. Things had been progressing on a normal way. Things have been turning, and however the sun, moon, and stars work now or then, they were already in motion in that working. And when God moves away from the creation, light dissipates from the earth, and there is a morning and an evening that takes place prior to that. It could have simply been the light of God itself, but we also know from the book of Revelations, and we also know from multiple places in the prophets, that whenever God is present. He is the greatest light, in that there is no need of a sun or a moon when God's around. However, we are also told that in Isaiah 66, for example, that while there may not be a need for a sun and a moon, that in that time all flesh will come and worship in the Sabbath and in the new moon. So we know that the new moon will be observed, for instance, at that end time. And we also know that God has respect to it, but He in His light is greater, that there would be no need of it. And that is the full revelation of light of the light of God, which amplifies the light that He created, because the light He created is in effect God's light in a smaller form as we see it now. We can't forget that God created those things up there, those luminaries in the heavens, those lights in the heavens, because the moment we forget that, our mind may go to paganism or may go to some unholy faith that put some other thought, like horoscope observations and things. But truthfully, that is not anything. It has nothing to do with godly timekeeping. It has nothing to do with other gods or paganism. God made the sun, moon, and stars to be used in the way He said to be used, for signs, seasons, days, and years. That is, and to give light upon the earth is the other reason also, as the Bible lists them out. But those four that we keep hitting, that is time, and they're based upon the lights in the heavens. When God ordains light to rule over the earth, He has given a dominion, a government over what happens on the earth. Let them rule, the sun to rule by day, the moon to rule by night, and the stars also. Those things are ruling the world. Truly, you take them away and everything falls apart. And so there is a true and absolute rulership, a true and absolute jurisdiction even, that the sun and moon is committed to upon earth, and that is in the purpose of timekeeping and giving light upon the earth. If you separate the sun, moon, and stars from the Genesis 1 purpose that God gave them, not only do you deny the Creator and the organic law, the intrinsic law that is bound in the lights in the heavens, but you cause yourself to not be able to understand the Scriptures when it talks about any one of those four things: signs, seasons, days, years. Just like today's Gregorian calendar, we say year and we think January 1st. When we write the year, we number it. Are we actually numbering periods of time? Sure we are. Sure, you could say, oh, the Gregorian calendar is a solar-based calendar, and we've just divvied it up this way or that way. It's not solar-based. How many people know that? For instance, just to show the ridiculousness of it, most people know that the word Deca means 10. But December is the 12th month. How did that happen? December means the 10th month. But somehow, it's the 12th month now. People don't ask that. And as you go backwards into all the other months, you can see that happening over and over again. September, 7th month, October, 8th month, November, 9th month. None of them line up. Okay? And I'm not even proposing that when they were lined up, they were correct, because they were not. Okay? So, that is just a quick example to try and show the ridiculous nature that our modern Gregorian calendar uses in its abstract time. So are we measuring units of sun time by using the Gregorian calendar system? Well, absolutely not. Even if you were to start at what people call the equinox or the solstice, they don't match up. Things don't match up. The first month does not occur during an equinox or a solstice or any type of measurement. But those things do exist within the calendar system, but so does everything happening in the heavens exist within a calendar system. So long as you capture it in a box, put it on a piece of paper on the wall, and adjust for it properly so that time does not slip as we use our leap years in order to balance things out. So, while the Gregorian calendar is called a solar calendar, it is not. It is absolutely not a reckoning of solar time. So, and there's no way to prove that one thing occurs on the same exact day as the other. Now, is the sun in the same similar position? Similarly, sure. And once you adjust for that leap year, you might have something even closer in similarity every 7 years. But you are not going to have the alignments of the moon and the stars and everything else in that same similar way. It's not going to happen every year alike because it does not take an account for the other lights in the heavens which God has ordained. So when Pope Gregory VIII decided to put his name in the 1500s on that calendar system, he apparently did it as a vicar of Christ that didn't really need the Father's understandings on creation to do it. And he didn't need the dictates of the Bible in order to follow creation law either, so that things would align properly. So let's move on to this next concept that we get into as we try to remember that just simply, we're going to go back and look at this further in some of the later messages that are to come. We will get into more scripture and more language study in order to understand some more about this subject. But we're just going to focus on a word that we know and in its rudimentary understanding, day, right? Whenever we get into Genesis chapter 2, we are told that on the seventh day, God rested from all of his labors. We're told that God rested on the seventh day. He sabbathed on the seventh day. The word rest is the word sabbath. And he sanctified it and he made it holy. Okay? Now the question is, how do we know that that is Saturday? And that the Pope was accurate whenever he proclaimed Saturday to be the seventh day? Even though the Catholic Church promoted people to rest on Sunday, which was supposedly the first day of the week, the calendar system says Saturday is the Sabbath. This is the day God rested. And here's the question. Which light in the heavens, according to Genesis 1, because remember why God created the lights in the heavens, sun, moon, stars, greater light, lesser light, stars, to be for signs, seasons, days, and years. Which light in the heaven dictates that the Sabbath is what they call Saturn's day, Saturday? What dictates that? And how do you know what a Saturn's day looks like? Is it because of the planet Saturn, because it's named after it? Absolutely not. Has absolutely not one common relationship with the planet Saturn. Nor does Sunday have anything to do with the sun other than a name. It's fiat. Let it be. It's false. It's an abstract thought with pagan words surrounding it to keep our minds straight. So, which light in the heavens dictates a Saturday. Furthermore, which light in the heavens tells us that it is the Sabbath? Is there a sign for it? Is there a season that's an appointed time by, you know, 1600s definition, understanding? Even Noah's 1828 will tell you that the word season does not specifically refer to the four seasons of the year, but rather that it refers to an appointed time. So, by saying that, what do we know, and how do we know it's a Sabbath? Well, God told us what time is predicated upon. It's on the lights in the heavens. One of the lights in the skies said it was the Sabbath. And it wasn't the planet Saturn. The sun does not dictate Sabbath days. There is no way to look at the sun and say, every 7 days the sun does this, so therefore we know that it was a solar Saturday event. The stars don't dance around in a certain way or sit in a certain place every 7 days. But I'll tell you something that does happen. About every 7 days, the moon changes. The moon goes and has a phase, a sign, if you will, and it appoints a season, an appointed time, that signals a day. And we absolutely, 100%, have to use the lights in the heavens to understand what a Sabbath day is. Because it's a day. And if it's a day, it falls under the definition of time that the lights dictate. It is not able to be broken off from that understanding in Genesis 1. Genesis 2 must be defined by Genesis 1. That day is being proclaimed by the lights in the heavens somehow, some way. And if my theory, which is more than a theory as we get into this, it's a fact about the moon, it dictates the Sabbath, then the question is, does it still do that? Or maybe it changed after Jesus came. No, the moon didn't change. Didn't do anything because of the cross. And so once you start seeing that a Sabbath day and a day is something that doesn't change, and it's something that is actually tied to the lights of the heavens, more things will start revealing itself, like what God has said then, He is saying now, what He had promised then, He is promising now, what He shows Himself to be, He is now, and that His glory that was, still is, and evermore shall be. And this is a fact that you can see in the night sky or in the day sky as we speak. And it absolutely validates the understanding of true time and how our Creator would like us to follow it.